Hi, and welcome to the Red Roses Spartacus League podcast. Very glad to have again here Paul Dobson from the Communist Party in Venezuela. Now, Paul and I spoke back in September, I think it was, about what was happening in Venezuela there and what the PSUV, the ruling Venezuelan Socialist Party, was doing to the Communist Party, the PCV. Paul, do me a favor, do a quick introduction of yourself and remind us very, very briefly what we spoke about back in September. Then we'll talk about what's happening now.
Oh yeah, Stuart. So thanks very much for having me onto your podcast, and a big hello to all of your listeners who are tuning in today. So my name is Paul Dobson. I'm a member of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of Venezuela, elected in the last Congress of ours, which was the 16th Congress held in November 2022.
Congratulations, mate. Well done.
Well, thank you very much. A great honor to be elected to the Central Committee of such a historic party. The Communist Party of Venezuela has now been in existence for over 90 years. That's a long time of struggle.
Absolutely. And the struggle continues. So tell us what happened back in September when they effectively tried to ban you guys by imposing some kind of fake leadership upon you.
Effectively, yes, Stuart. The Communist Party of Venezuela, just to give a very quick recap to your listeners, because as many probably won't have heard about what's going on here. It's not made the big news, the mainstream media, obviously. So the Communist Party of Venezuela for many years coincided with the governments of turn, both of Hugo Chavez and then later his successor, Nicolas Maduro. And we supported the government. We were never part of the government. We never had ministries or formed a coalition per se, but we supported their governments from the PSUV party. This changed around 2018 as a result of an accumulation of government policies, which we had to criticize based on obviously our class interests, which were at that point distinct from the interest being expressed by the government. So Venezuela entered a very deep crisis of capitalism, predating the change of government, so around 2012, essentially, which was accentuated by the drop in oil prices, and of course, hugely accentuated by the US-led sanctions on the country, which started in 2017. So this crisis of capitalism was confronted by the government now of Nicolas Maduro in a way which led to not just us, but a number of left-wing allies of his distancing themselves from his policies. His idea to overcome this crisis of capitalism, a cyclical crisis of capitalism, was to grant major concessions to large and especially transnational capital. And at the same time, really, really working down working class rights, rolling back a lot of hard-fought gains for the workers, and contracting domestic demand through a massive wage, a real wage reduction, which has sent thousands and probably millions back into poverty. Now, this was the crux of our decision to distance ourselves from the PSUV government, which led in 2018 to a formal break with them. Now, obviously, the government didn't like this, Stuart. I think this was fairly clear for all to see. And they didn't like the fact that people were criticizing them from a left-wing perspective. And this led them to try to apply a number of different methods to silence us, essentially. These methods didn't work. And their last card was the one that they applied last year, in fact, in 2023. So, what happened last year? Essentially, they grouped together a handful, no more than a dozen, of their own members and one or two ex-communist members, no current members, no Communist Party members, one or two ex-members who had left the party, being accused of corruption and other things many years ago. So they grouped these people together, dressed them all up in newly printed PCV clothing, caps, t-shirts, and everything else. And then presented them to the country through the state-run press as a leadership challenge within the Communist Party of Venezuela. Now, this, of course, was farcical to us because they weren't Communist Party members. They weren't communists. They were members of the government party. This was very clear to us. But obviously, in the means of communication and the press, all of this can be distorted. Now, these people ended up introducing a leadership contest qualm to the Supreme Court of Justice. And this basically argued that they, as supposed PCV members, which was false, is false, continues to be false, were being excluded from the decision-making process of the party. Now, the Supreme Court judges have all been appointed by the current government. So it was very clear, very obvious, that they were going to rule in favor of this government-backed and government-financed, very importantly, government-financed group of people who are looking to take over and kidnap the PCV's political line and, more importantly, our electoral ticket. This ruling came out in August, Stuart, and as expected, it ruled in favor of the government in this case. And the legal figurehead of the PCV, which for on and off for the last 90 or so years has been led by the working class, now passed over to these representatives of the petit bourgeoisie. This group of 7 or 8 people, none of which who are communists, now control the Communist Party of Venezuela's assets, the Communist Party of Venezuela's legal name, and, like I said, our electoral ticket. Now, they very quickly said that that electoral ticket is going to be backing Nicolas Maduro in the presidential elections later this year, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit further on in the podcast. But this is more or less a background. So basically, the Communist Party of Venezuela, the party itself, the party structure, the party membership, is now illegal per se. There is a parallel Communist Party of Venezuela, a shell of a party with a name and a leadership, but they have no membership, they have no regional structures, they have no branches, they have no political line, they have no congresses. It's not a real party, essentially. Whereas the real party, which continues to exist, which holds its congresses, which has a political bureau, which has a press outlet, which has branches and everything else, is working essentially clandestinely outside of the legal structures awarded to it by the bourgeois state. So this is more or less the situation, Stuart.
Extraordinary. I think many people will find this a shock because, some people talk here and also in the States as if Venezuela is a communist country. Now, I don't think things have got a whole lot better since we spoke back in the autumn. I see that January 4th this year, on the eve of the election of the new board of directors of the parliament, Maduro met with the PSUV executive and claimed that the assault on the Communist Party was one of his great achievements for 2023. He said the Central Committee of the PCV had surrendered to corruption and imperialism. Now, the genuine communists obviously issued statements countering this very quickly, reminding Maduro that the PSUV and its leaders have been the protagonists of corruption in general, and specifically looting schemes across the Venezuelan oil industry for some time. Paul, this guy, Henry Parra, I was reading about, PSUV hack, I see that he's trying to steal the seat held by a communist lawmaker in the Venezuelan National Assembly. Is this true? And if so, can you elaborate? Why are the PSUV doing this?
Essentially, yes, Stuart. Every 5th of January, the National Assembly in Venezuela re-elects its what in the UK would be its speaker and deputy speaker, essentially. Here we call them the president and the first and second vice presidents of the National Assembly. And these are all dominated by the PSUV, as is to be expected, because they have a huge parliamentary majority. The Communist Party has one seat, one lawmaker in the National Assembly, who was elected in 2020 on a broad ticket of a whole range of left-wing movements, excluding the PSUV. But not just a Communist Party vote. This is important. There was a lot of other small left-wing parties and groups, grassroots organizations who accompanied us in that electoral battle. And we managed to get one deputy elected, which was for us a large victory. So he's there representing all of these voices. He's there representing these people who are trying to live on a minimum wage in Venezuela, who are against the government policy. And importantly, he's representing even a lot of people, a lot of grassroots members of the PSUV who are in disagreement with their party line. People who still believe in the revolutionary dream of Hugo Chavez, for example, and who now look at the government policy and say, not in our name, essentially. So he's the only member of parliament essentially talking about wages, talking about the workers, talking about healthcare, education, collective contracts, and so on. And this, of course, has proved to be a stone in the shoe of the PSUV, who look to whitewash parliament and pass laws without any sort of debate. This has been a common practice over the last year or two. So obviously this, for them, needed to be silenced. Just before the new leadership of the National Assembly was elected this year, the person or the leader of these mercenaries who are now in charge or have now got control of the PCV's legal figurehead, a guy called Henry Parra, an ex-member of ours, in fact, expulsed from the party many, many years ago. He held a press conference basically calling on the National Assembly and the new leadership to not allow the communist deputy to speak or introduce any sort of proposal in the National Assembly, because according to Henry Parra, he now doesn't speak in the name of the Communist Party. Now, this was shocking. This was shocking. Firstly, because a deputy who is elected to a National Assembly is not elected on a sort of quota basis from his party. The deputy, Oscar Figueroa, his name is there representing a whole range of the electorate who voted for him, not just one party. So whether or not he represents the Communist Party of Venezuela or not is to some extent secondary. And also this would be if they come to actually exclude him, which is, there is precedence. This has been done with members of parliament before. If this does occur against Oscar Figueroa, this would be a huge attack on not just the Communist Party of Venezuela and these working class voices, but on democracy itself to some extent, on the system itself and all of the people who voted for this deputy to take a seat in this body. So this is extremely worrying that this attack is now going beyond an attack against the Communist Party and is starting to attack a whole sector of the electorate who maybe aren't in agreement with the government policy from a left-wing perspective.
I wonder, is similar grief being inflicted on other parties at the moment in the left opposition, or has it just been reserved for the Communist Party?
As the contradiction deepens, Stuart, this contradiction that has grown in the last couple of years between the working people and the government policy, a contradiction which has always existed historically, structurally, in a capitalist society as we have in Venezuela, but over the last couple of years has really increased quite significantly and has become a lot more antagonic, we could say. As this contradiction deepens, the voices on the left against government policy are increasing. And the government has, of course, sought ways to resolve this contradiction, because the stronger this contradiction is, the weaker the government is, we could say, to some extent. So the government has invented a number of different ways of silencing these voices or resolving this contradiction. Everything except, let's say, retaking the left-wing policies, which the people are looking for them to do. So on the one hand, we've seen an uptick in persecution, especially of labor leaders. A number of trade unionists in Venezuela are currently behind bars, many illegally without arrest warrants. Only last week, a regional leader of the Teachers Federation was, arrested because there was no arrest warrant. He was kidnapped by security forces violently while in a trade union meeting. They were organizing a strike in one of the states, and he was taken away by state security forces. And only recently we found out where he is. This is a common modus operandi of the state to try to quieten some of these voices. But we can also look at other tactics that they've applied, Stuart, within the PSUV itself. Remember, very important to remember, the PSUV is a party which is made up of different fractions. It's a polyclass-based party. It is not a united party. From its very first days, it was an amalgamation of different groups, different organizations. And these fractions continue to have strong contradictions between themselves. So the left-wing fraction within the governing party still exists, but they have been massively sidelined. a lot of their leaders have been deselected from seats, and they've been basically taken out of the policy-making apparatus of the party. And this is another way the state has dealt with these dissident, let's say, left-wing voices from within. Other groups outside of the PSUV have been denied their legal right, for example, to form a political party and contest in elections. One example is the group led by Rafael Uzgategui, what's left of the PPT. For no particular reason, the electoral authorities denied them the right to register as a political party, which is another way the state is looking to quieten their voices. And I think this is very important, Stuart, these elements, because in these actions, we can see how the PSUV and the state apparatus has now contradictory class interests to those of the working class in Venezuela. In these actions, we can go beyond the rhetoric, we can go beyond the discourse, which sometimes sounds so wonderful coming out of Caracas, and we can see in these actions what their genuine real class interests are. And they are against the trade unions, they're against the organized working people, and they are against left-wing criticisms.
Yeah, it's interesting. That takes me on to my next question very nicely there, mate. The PSUV does seem to be making common cause with FEDECAMARAS, which is the business federation, sections of the opposing right wing, and also the US government. Now, am I being too conspiratorial here, looking for straightforward corruption and sellout and capitulation to American pressure? Or do they genuinely believe that what they're doing now is the right thing by the country and the Venezuelan working people?
Well, I think when we talk about the right thing by the country, again, we have to go back to class interests, Stuart. The economic crisis I described at the beginning of the program, which is obviously a lot more complex than time allows us to go into in this podcast. But this economic crisis, this structural crisis of capitalism, coincided with and obviously had a dialectical causal relationship with a change in balance within the PSUV itself. So I just recently talked now about the left-wing currents within the PSUV. But there are also petty bourgeois currents, and there are large bourgeois currents within the PSUV, large landowners, business, industrial owners, and so on. And the deepening of this economic crisis coincided with a shift whereby these sectors took over the PSUV from within, essentially, replaced a lot of essentially middle policymakers and then some of the higher policymakers, and really exerted their dominance within the governing party to the extent that today, all of the decision-making positions within the PSUV are held by representatives of the petit bourgeoisie or the large bourgeoisie. Here we can see a shift in their class interests from at one time, especially during Chavez, having class interests at the core of the policymaking apparatus of the state. Nowadays, the petit bourgeoisie and the large bourgeoisie who are expressing their interests. So this is, of course, no surprise now that we see them making common cause with the business federation, with opposition right-wing sectors, and so on, because they share the same class interests. And these policies now in favor of capital, obviously contradictory to the working class and labor, have brought notable applause from the business sectors. There's nothing the business sectors like more than a government which bans a communist party who has it in its back pocket, as is essentially the case now with this false communist party controlled and financed by the government. And we've seen this, Stuart. One of the most notable messages which came out on social media in the lead up to this attack on the communist party was a tweet from FEDECAMARAS applauding the PSUV government in their attacks on the communist party. And this didn't surprise us, of course, but for many it did. For many, it did. But in these elements, we can see this the shared interests between the now dominant currents within the PSUV and the economic representatives of the country.
I think it's a lesson for all of us that pursue real change. One of the big problems with reformism, and this goes back to the Labour government of 1945, if you leave a ruling class in place, they will resist. They have the means to resist, and they will do so in a ruthless way, and they will assert their authority. Do you think also that they're cooperating Now with the right wing, because it makes a little bit less likely that the CIA will lead another coup.
Well, I mean, if we look at the US policy towards Venezuela at the moment, there's really no need for them to bring about a coup.
True.
The Venezuelan government today is essentially applying everything the Biden government or even a Trump government would economically within their own company. If we looked at a wish list of the White House maybe 15 years ago for Venezuela, it would look very similar to what current government policy is. It would include tearing up collective contracts. It would include dollarization. It would include setting up special economic zones for foreign capital, whereby they don't have to adhere to local labor laws. It would include driving down the minimum wage. The current minimum wage, Stuart, in Venezuela, the legal minimum wage is £3 a month. And this is absurd. This is absolutely absurd. The government themselves have recognized that nobody can live on this, obviously. And this would be a key element of multinational capital and its political representatives. We're talking about the White House here, but we could equally be talking about Brussels or the IMF or London, for example. This would be top on their wish list of what they would like to see introduced into Venezuela. And second on the list would be opening up the Venezuelan oil industry and natural resources to foreign multinational capital. And this is exactly what is happening, Stuart.
So they've basically got what they wish without the aggro of having to organize a coup. I look at the Venezuelan economy and I see GDP growth was around 4% in 2023, which is better than pretty much anybody in the European Union. And it's forecast to be 4.5% in 2024. Maduro was apparently demanding more effusive applause from the groups of business people he was addressing whenever he trumpeted these figures. This is a question I think you pretty much answered anyway. Who's getting the benefit of this growth? It sure as hell does not appear to be the Venezuelan working class. I see reports about salaries being replaced by bonuses and retired oil workers not being fully paid the monies to which they're entitled. So it sure as hell isn't going to the Venezuelan working people. Who's getting it? And to what extent is the PSUV being rewarded by this?
For many years of the harshest years, let's say, of the economic crisis of capitalism, Stuart, when the Venezuelan workers were starting to protest and organize themselves against these policies to drive down wages, the government responded essentially with two lines. They firstly said, look, we've got all these sanctions, there's not enough budget for us to increase wages. And at the time, a lot of people said, you know, this sounds reasonable. This sounds reasonable. And the second line of the government said, we're in recession. The economy contracted something like 85% over 6 years. I mean, this is a huge contraction. But the government said, you know, when the economy starts growing again, we will increase wages. And everyone said, okay, this also sounds reasonable. This sounds logical. They accepted that. That quietened things down for a while. If we look at the country now, Stuart, as you say, the economy is growing, obviously from a very significantly reduced size in the first place, 15% of what it was in 2013, but it is growing. We're seeing the sanctions every day are being applied less. We're seeing multinational capital coming into the country. We're seeing the CEO, the board of directors, in fact, of Chevron being invited to the presidential palace to sit down with the president and have a nice cup of coffee. So now the workers are saying, hold on, what about these sanctions? We don't see any sanctions. We see government officials and ministers on lavish holidays abroad and holding massive multi-million dollar concerts in their backyard. And you're talking to us about sanctions. And on the other hand, they're looking at their government and are saying, but the economy is growing. Where are our wages? Wages have been frozen for over 2 years now in Venezuela, with inflation rates still well above 150%, which means that, as I said at the beginning, the contraction in domestic demand has been brutal, Stuart. And people are really struggling to survive. And all the while, looking at some of these lavish government policies, looking at, for example, the ex-oil minister, Tarek El Aissami, who, by the government's own confession, stole $2 billion from the Venezuelan oil industry and hasn't been arrested. He has disappeared since these accusations were made. And it is understood that he's living in his house, wherever that may be in Caracas, and is not being arrested by the government. So $2 billion can go disappearing, can disappear from the oil industry, but there's not enough money to pay an extra dollar to the teachers and the doctors and the nurses who are working for £3 a month.
What are the Venezuelan working class, the people that turned out in the streets to defend the PSUV and the whole Bolivarian revolution in general, what are they doing about this dire situation? What are the trade unions saying?
Here we can generally group three responses, Stuart. There's been a group of the workers, a group of working class people, obviously those with the least amounts of class consciousness, we can say, who have essentially sold out to these new policies, who have got on board with these new policies, who have basically converted themselves into alienated lumpen and said, yeah, this is a way forward. Private capital is a way forward. We're still going to be earning our crumbs, but we need more private capital. And this is an important sector of the workers, especially associated with the PSUV. There's another large group of workers, much larger group of workers, who have responded to the situation by basically disactivating themselves, distancing themselves from the class struggle, and concentrating on survival, basically, concentrating on feeding their families, concentrating on holding up two or three jobs at a time, holding up trying to educate their children because the schools aren't working. And this includes, of course, many millions of workers, around 5 million, maybe more, who have left the country, who have emigrated out of Venezuela, essentially because of these economic policies and looking for a better life for them or their families. So these people are now not active in the class struggle. These are now people who will maybe vote, but probably not even that, but are definitely not involved in trade union activity or organized class struggle within the country. And the third group, which is the most interesting one, with regards to the class struggle, are those workers with a higher level of class consciousness who have decided to try to confront these policies by increasing their levels of popular organization, by increasing their mobility and increasing their militancy, to discuss and confront these measures. And these are the groups we've seen come out onto the streets very recently. They're being led by teachers' unions and doctors' and nurses' unions, and they're demanding wage increases, they're demanding collective contracts, they're demanding all of these rights, which were hardly won under the Chavez government and which have now been rolled back. And this is where we're now seeing the highest levels of class struggle in the country. And it's really transcending the traditional political lines between chavismo and opposition, right-wing opposition. This false polarization of the country into two blocks is now not applicable at all. We're seeing workers who affiliate themselves with right-wing parties being arrested by the government. We're seeing workers affiliated with the Communist Party arrested by the government. And this is where we're looking to really try to confront these economic policies by this corrupt and immoral government.
Paul, what do you think happens next? Generally and specifically to the Venezuelan Communist Party, do you guys feel any real danger here?
Of course, Stuart, of course, we are essentially illegally. We are essentially working illegally, doing our political work illegally. When I talk to you in the name of the Communist Party, the Central Committee of the Communist Party, as I do now, essentially, according to the bourgeois state legal apparatus, I don't have the right to do that. And so all of us speaking in the name of the Communist Party at the moment here in Venezuela are to some extent doing so on the margins of the law. And this is extremely concerning. But we're going to continue struggling. We're going to continue in the right, correct dialectical analysis of our material conditions. And at the moment, that leads us to be in the streets alongside the people in these marches, in these protests against these government policies. And of course, it doesn't allow us to be in bed with the government. It doesn't allow us to make concessions to the government. And it doesn't allow us, of course, to back the government in the upcoming elections, which are scheduled for this year. So our struggle continues, the class struggle continues well beyond the legal rights which a bourgeois system grants to a political party or not. The class struggle continues to develop, and this is exactly where we are. And just a quick point about the presidential election, Stuart, because I'm sure many of your listeners will have that on their radar a little bit. Presidential election scheduled for this year. At the moment, the way things are looking at the time of this podcast, very dubious in terms of the legitimacy of these elections. It is more than likely that the government candidate will be the incumbent president himself. Us, the communists, are essentially barred from running because we don't have control over our electoral ticket. The electoral ticket of the PCV will be backing Maduro, but of course, as I've explained, without a party behind it. The right-wing opposition are currently looking for their candidate, and everything would indicate if they're able to unite around any candidate, whoever that may be, they will more than likely win. The recent polls seem to indicate quite strongly that the government based voters have been reduced massively over the last 5 or 6 years. And the traditional problems which have hampered the right-wing opposition, which revolve around personal interests and divisions, if overcome, would not be a problem to them beating the government. And this is, to some extent, the fear the government have at the moment. The main right-wing candidate, I won't even name her because she's such a dirty piece of work. She doesn't deserve to be named on such a prestigious podcast, but she's recently been barred from running. And this is essentially a show of fear from the government. The government are aware that she probably would, at this moment, have beaten them in a fair election. And so obviously they can't allow a fair election to be held. So this is worrying as well. This is a massive rollback in terms of democracy. Venezuela took massive strides in terms of advancing worker-led, people-led democracy under Hugo Chavez, and these are now being rolled back. We expect participation to be meager. The participation in the recent referendum held in the country in December, we're not quite sure because the authorities haven't even said what it really is. But everything suggests it may have been as low as 10% turnout, which is shocking for a referendum on an issue of national importance. So these are the sort of problems the elections are going to hold. And of course, for us, the communists, it's going to bring greater persecution and greater contradictions with the bourgeois parties.
Paul, this is all quite shocking. The situation seems to have deteriorated pretty much rapidly since we spoke in September. For your closing remarks, please, sir, we need to do something more about this across here. We need to begin a proper campaign. Let us know what we could do to help.
Well, I think it's very important, Stuart, for all of your listeners to my first call will be for them to inform themselves well. A lot of political activists or left-wing activists in Britain and across the world are still, to some extent, stuck on their analysis of Venezuela from 10 or 15 years ago, when Venezuela was a genuinely an anti-imperialist bastion, and we were building or working to build popular power and socialism in the country, genuinely. So a lot of people now need to update their analysis. They need to look at the genuine conditions in Venezuela today. They need to ask why the economy is 85% dollarized, why the government are pushing private capital instead of public state-run capital, and answer a few of these hard questions, I think. Why is a minimum wage in Venezuela £3 a month, for example? So they need to update their analysis to some extent. And I'm fairly sure that when they do that, they will come to some very similar conclusions to those which I've been presenting on this podcast tonight, which may sound slightly in left field to a lot of people. But again, update your analysis, have a look at what's going on in Venezuela today. Things have changed here quite significantly. And importantly, don't get drawn into the trick of believing what a spokesperson is saying from the government. When you hear Maduro talk about anti-imperialism, you have to look at his actions. Do his actions correspond with his rhetoric? Is maybe supporting the Palestinian cause, which is entirely noble and correct, is that enough to now define yourselves as anti-imperialist when in fact you're strengthening the control of domestic capital within your own country? Is that what imperialism is now, supporting Palestine? I think imperialism goes a little bit deeper than that, includes that, but goes deeper than that, of course. So don't be tricked by some of the rhetoric. And of course, don't be tricked by these false mercenaries. It's entirely possible, Stuart, that this group of hacks, as you call them, we call them here mercenaries, they sold themselves out for a political victory. It's entirely possible they'll be in London at some point, in the embassy or around some of the organizations there, parading themselves as a Venezuelan communists. And of course, telling you how wonderful Bolivarian socialism is, a socialism which doesn't exist. So don't be tricked by the rhetoric on any side, essentially, and find out for yourselves exactly and ask yourselves why the economic conditions in Venezuela are as they are.
Yeah, seek understanding beyond your immediate perception is one of the things that we try and instill with this podcast series, and indeed in life and politics in general. So it's important we begin there. Okay, Paul, as ever, thanks for your time. That's been a very, very good expose and explanation of what's happening now in Venezuela. I will do my best here and with various comrades and indeed former comrades to begin a campaign which will do something, albeit minor, to help you guys out across there, because my God, you do need it. Thank you very much indeed, sir, and good luck. And thank you to everybody who's listened. I'll put some more information about the situation in Venezuela up on the website which accompanies the podcast. So in the meantime, seek understanding beyond your immediate perception. This has been Red Roses Spartacus League podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Solidarity with everybody, particularly with the Venezuelan Communist Party. Good night.